Moncrief on News Talk.
Time now, though, to take a look at some other news stories from around the world. We are joined by Jonathan de Burke Butler. Jonathan, how are you today?
Tom, how are you getting on? Good to see you.
You're going off to Holland first, where I have to say it's all going off.
It is, but it might not be for much longer, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately. I hate fireworks, I have to say, Tom. I don't know how you feel about them.
I think a good firework display is always very impressive. I haven't seen very many, but the odd time when somebody with very deep pockets has put on a firework display, you do tend to be standing there in awe at what's going on.
Now that you remind me, Bilbao was the best that I ever saw.
Yeah.
I was there during a thing called Semana Grande and it was exceptional. It really was amazing. So, like yourself, I like them when there's a good display, but not when there are fireworks going off.
No, when
the
they're kind of amateur or, you know, someone's dad suddenly reaches into the boot of the car. That's exciting as it is.
Yes,
that's a different kettle of fish.
Yeah, and that's exactly what the Dutch Parliament has now voted to get rid of, right? So they're putting a ban on people buying and setting off fireworks. Now, they're not bringing it in until next New Year's Eve. So the New Year's Eve that's coming up, you'll be able to have your fireworks.
Right.
But the following year, you won't. And the reason they're doing that is because they have reached a point of no return, or at least they think that, right? Last New Year Eve, would you believe that two people were killed and over 1,100 people needed emergency treatment for a range of injuries, burns, eye damage, lost
fingers.
That's
incredible. The numbers are off the clock.
Two people killed. There was 200 arrests as well, and about 16 million euros worth of damage was done as a result of the mayhem caused on New Year's Eve.
So what are they doing on New Year's Eve? They must be going mad.
Oh, they are. They're going crazy. I mean, they're using the fireworks as an excuse to do other things, set fire to scooters and cars and riot in general. So they're just going crazy. And they did try to ban some cities and towns. I think there was about 19 or 20 of them did try to ban it locally and say, look, you can't be setting these off. But people have turned around to them and said, look, you have to stop
right
people being able to sell them legally.
Wouldn't have expected that in the Dutch, would you?
Well, it's a funny one. Certainly on the continent, New Year's Eve is a bit of a thing for fireworks. Not so much here, although in recent years they're doing it a lot more. There's always Halloween here, but as I said, I noticed in recent years they're doing it more. But yeah, there's obviously something there.
I don't know about your own experiences of the Dutch, but I found them quite a serious people, not known for their sense of humour very often, we have found. Particularly in the football management world.
So yes,
that's,
indeed.
That's for sure what we've seen.
Yeah,
you know, I would like to base my entire knowledge of people on that.
But there is a bit of a mad streak in them, though.
Which they obviously keep for New Year's Eve.
They do indeed. And that's why they're putting a stop to all these. Right.
But they're going to go one more. They're going to let them do it once.
One more time. Yeah.
There's a red rag to a bull.
Yeah, and an MP has pointed out that, you know, by doing that, it'll be another kind of Armageddon and everybody will go completely crazy and go off the rails one more time. So that is likely. But the reason they're doing it is because they want to cut the amount of compensation that they're giving to these suppliers in half. So they expect that if they were to do it this year, it would cost them maybe 150 million. If they delay it for a year, it'll cost them 50 million. So they're looking at the numbers and they're saying,
all right. Okay, and has this got kind of public support or how did the
Dutch?
Yeah,
big time.
Yeah, totally,
three quarters of the Dutch public wanted gone. Yeah.
It's out of control.
Absolutely.
Right. Very good. My God. But the fireworks suppliers are seeking loads of compensation, are they?
They reckon they could lose something like 900 million. Now, that's a bit of a stretch. If the government are saying it's 150 million max, don't know where these guys are getting 895 from. But they'll probably meet somewhere halfway.
All right. Over to Mexico, and a story that sounds like something out of a John Wayne movie.
Mm. Have you ever heard of this group? It's an elite international liaison unit. That's how it's phrased anyway. And they're known as the Gringo Hunters. Now, this is a bunch
Those two phrases are so at odds. You know, you have this elite international liaison unit known as...
It's like the Magnificent Seven, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, yeah. So the Gringo Hunters, they're called. They were set up in 2002 to cooperate with US authorities. And their specific job is to get fugitives who have jumped over the border from the United States, right? And they've been working together with the United States ever since 2002, as I said. So far, they've arrested over 1,600 fugitives. So they've done pretty well.
So Mexico is a hotbed of fugitives from the, like in those westerns.
Yeah, like in the westerns.
Where if they wanted to escape justice, they would, you know, cross the Rio Grande.
Yeah, Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, all of that.
Character goes down to Mexico as well.
Yeah, okay. So that still goes on to this day.
Absolutely.
What kind of people would you have?
All sorts. They've got lists of people, you know, got the usual fraudsters and murderers, and then they've also got playboy models who've skipped town, Catholic priests and professional athletes who are also wanted felons.
That is a real weird mix of,
it's quite
of
a
types.
Mix. Yeah, yeah, quite a mix.
Playboy but, you know, models.
Yeah, people getting away from their past and trying to get into Mexico, which I suppose would have a bit of a reputation, let's be honest, for being a little bit lawless.
Yes.
But this group, anyway, put together, and this is their job to track these guys down. Now, unfortunately, they had a bit of a disaster last week. On Wednesday, they had tracked down an individual by the name of Cesar Hernandez, a 34-year-old who had escaped from a state prison in the United States in December. Now, the descriptions that were given by some in the media that was that video showed him sprinting across a field. Now, this might have been be nice to the police who were in pursuit of him, who weren't going particularly fast, because the video footage that I saw shows him jogging across a green in an orange jumpsuit, being pursued by a policeman who could might have failed the guard a fitness test. So anyway,
that's like a vision from The Shawshank.
Yes,
now,
it is. Absolutely.
And was he in an orange jumpsuit?
He was in an orange jumpsuit, and you can see the video. It's online. It's amazing.
A vision of the man chasing him, like, overweight and trying to smoke a cigar at the same time.
Absolutely, he gets away. Anyway, he skips the border, skips over the border, and the gringo hunters discovered him about 30 kilometers over the border in Tijuana.
Didn't get far.
No, he didn't get too far, but he's in Mexico, so he's relatively safe. They swooped on him anyway. They located him on Wednesday, and they surrounded him, but they were met by a hail of bullets, and unfortunately, one of their number was shot. Abigail Esparza Reyes, she was the 33-year-old leader of the local unit who had tracked them down. They
That's
put
dreadful.
A cordon, terrible, desperate stuff. They put a cordon around the house that they had enclosed him in, but he managed to get through that. And later on, CCTV footage show him running through Tijuana, pretty much naked. He only had his boxer shorts on. He goes underneath a tarp that was covering a car and comes out of it a few minutes later in a yellow jumpsuit, which the type of people who are doing roadworks would use.
Yeah.
And he strolls off and he still hasn't been found.
It's funny. It seems to veer from this, sounds like a movie, to real life where this poor woman has lost her life.
Lost her life. She was responsible for over 400 operations, 400 successful operations to arrest US fugitives. She was obviously a big deal, very good at her job. But in this case, she got very
awful.
Unlucky.
God, it's so bizarre. And he's still at
he's still on the run.
Lawlessness, exactly. Now, an update on a country that we used to feature a lot, but went kind of quiet for a while.
We used to, one of our favourite characters on this slot was a guy called John Magafuli. He had the nickname the Bulldozer, not because he was in construction, but because he was a bit of a tough nut. And he didn't particularly like opposition parties. He wasn't big on the free media, but in fairness to him, he wasn't big on people wasting money either. I remember one of the first things that he did was he stopped all diplomatic flights, and that saved the Tanzanian exchequer quite a bit of change. He died during COVID. He was a bit of a COVID skeptic, shall we say, and he died, although we don't know officially if that was why he died, but it's thought that that happened. And his replacement was a woman by the name of Samia Suluhu Hassan, okay? And when she came into power in 2021, she was sort of lauded for easing repression on political opponents and censorship of the media and that kind of thing. And people thought, okay, well, democracy has now returned to Tanzania. But it appears in the last number of years she is backtracking on that, okay? There's another character by the name of Tundu Lissu who has been involved in Tanzanian politics for a very long time. He was actually the victim of an assassination attempt in 2017. Nobody's ever found out who did it, although there is suspicion that Magufuli might have been involved.
Okay.
He hasn't left the scene of
Tanzania. Did I hear he was shot 16 times?
Shot 16 times at very close range.
How did anybody survive?
Still managed to survive. Went off to Kenya, was operated there. Went off to Belgium, was operated something like 20 times there.
Okay.
Survived, came back, was in exile for a while, came back. Fought against Magufuli in the 2020 elections, lost, went back to Belgium again, and then when Magufuli left the scene, he came back.
Right.
And he was going to be fighting in this election that's coming up in October of this year.
Okay.
But apparently the people who are in charge don't want him to do that, okay? So he was arrested last Wednesday at a rally. On Thursday, he was charged with treason. And on Friday, he was disqualified from running in the election. And these are all because of things that he allegedly said at a rally on April the 3rd, where he said where he called on his followers to try and prevent the election and was trying to allegedly inspire rebellion in them.
Right. If a man goes on in a public rally and tries to inspire rebellion, that's kind of, you'd have to expect what happens next, wouldn't you?
You would. But the question is whether he said these things or not.
No recordings,
as far as I know. As far as I know, but his lawyers are basically saying that this is politically motivated.
Yeah.
And you can see Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he's out of the race in October.
Okay.
And he would have been the biggest opposition person there.
There's loads of other stuff going on as well, though, isn't there? There's a rise in abductions and killings.
Yeah, of political opponents, and Hassan hasn't been able to answer questions about those. She certainly started well in terms of, you know, bringing democracy back and opening up the media. But it seems that things are getting a little bit shady there.
Okay. On to Zimbabwe. And this is really trying to right a century-old misjustice, isn't it?
It is. I suppose it depends on what side of the debate you land on, right? Now, Zimbabwe, it got its independence, as you know, in 1980. It used to have a white minority rule there. And for a very long time, Mugabe, who was in power for a very long time, kept the white farmers on side. But back in 2000 and 2001, when he owed money, he had to pay pensions for the army that got him into power, he decided to pay them by kicking the white farmers off the land. It was always something that he kept in his back pocket. Now, you'll remember, it caused a lot of controversy at the time. It was big news at the time. This was 2000, 2001. And he removed about 4,000 white farmers off the land, crashed the economy as a result for two reasons. Politically, the West weren't into what he was doing at all, but also the farmers that came in to replace the white farmers, they didn't know what they were doing, unfortunately.
Yeah. Historically now, he is removing white farmers who themselves had replaced black farmers.
Absolutely, and there is no disputing that whatsoever. Yeah. Okay. However, the generational gap, they had lost any sort of knowledge when they came back in. So you went from a situation where Zimbabwe was the breadbasket of Africa, as they called it, to being a basket case economically. And it's still in that situation. So when Emmerson Mnangagwa came into power in 2017, ever since then, he has been trying to restore relations with the West. And this is part of that, right? So they've announced that the first payment of $3 million is going out to some white farmers very soon. I haven't got an exact date. And that's part of a compensation agreement that was agreed in 2020. Now, the overall sum is $3.5 billion.
Okay. So far a drop in the ocean then.
Yeah, yeah. And what the government are saying is that we're not paying you for the land. We're paying you for the improvements that you made on the land while you were, quote-unquote, custodians of the farms.
Okay.
Okay? So it's playing to the, you know, to their voter base as well, saying, look, this isn't for the land, this is for the improvements. So far about 740 farmers out of about, 3,500, 4,000 have signed up. But that leaves about 2,500, 3,000 that are still holding on to their deeds and hoping...
They're playing the long game then,
Playing the long game, hoping that the government might collapse and they'll come back and
say that
they'll
was our land.
Take legal recourse.
Well, that's a conundrum. I can't see much of a way out of that now,
no,
can you?
The only thing about it is that representatives for the white farmers have said that now that the Zimbabwean government are actually paying out, they're seeing more people are coming on board for the compensation. So I suppose people were hedging their bets in a way to see the outcome and see would they actually pay.
So basically there's edging towards getting a bit of kind of forgiveness from the West and a bit of falling back into step with the West.
That's what they're trying to do because they're locked out of international trade at the moment as far as I know. So they really need it.
Very good. In Australia, a politician has admitted his mistake.
Yeah.
What a foolish thing to do.
They do it every now and again, particularly when they have elections around the corner. So there's elections in May, early 3rd of May, happening, parliamentary elections in Australia. Do you know they have elections there every 3 years?
That's very
bizarre, isn't it?
Very frequent, isn't it?
Yeah, I was kind of looking into it last night and I was wondering, why is that every 3 years? Anyway, I didn't get an answer, but there you go, it's a bizarre one. Anyway, Peter Dutton, who is the leader of an opposition coalition that's going up against the Labour government, has said that he made a mistake and he's apologised. He has pitched an idea to the electorate saying that he was going to end work from home options for public service. And he's done that because it's not a popular move. Now, when Donald Trump did it, I think on day one, signed his executive order cancelling that, work from home options. He got a big cheer from the crowd. I'm not sure how popular.
He gets a cheer for everything. Yeah.
I'm not sure how popular it actually was, but yeah. In Australia, it's gone down like a lead balloon, as they would probably say there. And he's had to backtrack and lost a couple of points in the opinion polls.
Yeah.
And he's turned and he said, no, got this wrong. We won't be doing that.
Well, the problem for him is that he can change what he says, but he can't change who he is.
Exactly. And that's what the Labour government have come out with.
Once you apologise, you open yourself up to that sort of stuff.
That's it. And you're opening yourself up to even more attacks now. So he has. They have taken a bit of a dip in the opinion polls there. They were on track to probably win, but you wouldn't know how this is going to affect him. He has a bit of a habit of putting his foot in it as well, this guy. I can't recall exactly, but there's a few other things that I remember he's had to backtrack on in the past.
Never apologise. That's the first rule. And they're talking about cutting 41,000 public service jobs all the same.
Yeah, that's what they said initially. But again, they've kind of backtracked on that as well. Or they've had to clarify. They've had to clarify a lot of it. They've had to clarify that they're going to do it over 5 years.
Okay.
So they're saying it'll happen naturally and, you know, people will resign. That kind of thing.
You won't notice them gone. Right. The World Trade Organization releasing growth forecasts this week.
Yeah. So this is what's coming up during the week. So tomorrow, the World Trade Organization is releasing a trade growth forecast. It'll be interesting to see what all these tariffs and everything else that's going on will, how they'll affect their forecast. Thursday, Donald Trump is hosting Giorgia Meloni at the White House, and Vance is going the other way. He's visiting Italy the following day.
Yeah, I think Donald's getting the better deal there. How do you think he's going to get on with her?
Well, they get on quite well, as far as I know. From what I recall, Meloni is being utilised, shall we say, by the European Union in a manner to kind of, butter him up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a good move.
And it probably is a good move. She's a clever lady.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with all of her policies, but there's no doubt she's a clever lady. And as far as Italian prime ministers go, she's lasted a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, they turn over prime ministers there maybe every 6 months to a year. I think she must be there 3 years at
Amazing.
This stage.
Yeah, Vance coming to Italy then. He can get in a few. He's a fan of Latin Mass, is Vance.
Yes, yeah. So he can get a few of those in if he goes. Is he Catholic? Is he?
He's a convert.
Ah, good way. Best kind.
Exactly. and then I see you also want to talk about World Snooker Championship.
That's happening on Saturday. They're starting on Saturday. I thought you'd be a fan. That's why I put it in there.
I just see you've crossed over from politics into world snooker,
but it's a global event.
Take your mind off the politics.
That's what it is. Yeah,
that makes perfect
sense. Saturday, 2 weeks of pure joy.
Pure joy. Yes, one of the great games for television. Jeopardy all the time.
Absolutely.
As we said yesterday, wonderful stuff. Jonathan, thanks very much for that.
Cheers, Tom.
Moncrief weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.